What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they have some mints. Got caffeine, L-theanine, and vitamins B6 and 12. Helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. Whenever I'm driving around showing houses, making phone calls to my clients, before a big meeting. Anytime I just feel like I need a little bit of a mental boost, I'll pop a piece of NeuroGum, and it usually gets me to where I need to be. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
And shout out to our people over at Captain Beard Co. They make amazing beard products. So they got beard butter, oils, and balms. They also have shampoo, conditioner, and body wash, and they've started making these amazing smelling candles. All stuff made with all natural ingredients local here in St. Louis. So give them a shot, and when you go to check out, use promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Yeah, I just ordered a bunch of Captain stuff for a bunch of the men in my family.
There you go.
Got everybody some body wash and some beard oil and some all the good stuff. So, and also shout out to our friends at Hand Wraps Rolling Papers. They are a local rolling paper company here in town. They've got rice and hemp rolling papers. They're in 16 local dispensaries here in town. So if cannabis is something that's legal in your state, like it is here in Missouri, you know, check them out. Like I said, they're in a couple dispensaries here in town. So if you see them, don't hesitate to pick some up. And now to introduce our awesome guest today. He is a father. He is the owner and creative director of Punchline Productions, the great and powerful Corey Shaunhurst.
Welcome. Great. Thank you guys for having me. Great and powerful is a lot to live up to, and it makes me feel like I should be behind a curtain.
Yeah. So a lot of people say that, but, you know, I guess it's the Wizard of Oz. I always do it as just like an homage to Rogan, just because I'm like a big Joe Rogan fan, and he always says that. So, but yeah, Corey, thank you so much for coming on, man. You know, we kind of had a last minute cancellation, and you filled in, swooped in, and saved the day for us. So. Yeah. Appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah. Well, you know, for the people that are out there that don't know you, can you give us just a little brief summary of who you are?
Yeah. So 1983, November 22nd, Belleville. It's a cold, dark night. I'm from St. Louis. Originally, I moved around a lot as a kid. Lived in Branson, Missouri for some time, or just outside of it. Lived in Tennessee for a little while. During middle school and parts of high school, the age-old question, I went to Hazel East for a brief time and then finished out at Parkway North, where I went to high school. And then University of Tampa for a little bit, Lindenwood, and then started my own business. So never actually finished college. I guess if anything, it's just to show you, don't agree to be mediocre.
I've got one. I've got a degree and I've yet to use it. So yeah.
I've got mine, and thankfully, well, it's somewhat to do with what I do. So
yeah, a lot of people don't use it. Yeah. And then after that time period, I had my first son early on. I've got two sons, 20, Blair, and he is a CBC grad and plays Ball State football right now.
Cool.
So he's a bad mamma jamma. He is the James Brown of our family, the hardest working man in the family thus far. See what the little guy does. And then Tyson, my youngest son, is 9. So he's in fourth grade. He's to Kirkwood School.
Cool.
I met your oldest one last night, and I've met Tyson a few times. He's a little spitfire.
He is a wrecking ball.
Yeah.
So you said you started your own business. What kind of business?
Yeah. The original one? Should we backtrack?
Yeah, let's backtrack.
So, the reason that I'm in a similar industry to you guys, almost exact one now, is because my first like big boy job, I'd call it, was selling advertising. So I used to sell advertising for what at the time was called Grand Slam Sports. It was St. Louis Sports Magazine and KFNS Radio. And during that time period, I kind of figured out that that was even a thing. I didn't know what marketing was, but I've always looked at commercials the same way the cable guy looks at television. It's just everything was commercialized. Prevalent in my childhood. It was a big part of just like who I was. So when I had the chance to go sell it, it was really exciting. Got to do innovative things, because I didn't know the industry. I was thinking outside the box, but just by pure dumb, it wasn't that I came in as some like savant. It was just like, oh, why don't we do this this way? And that's not how we do things. Try it. And so I found some success there.
Like doing what?
So I would say like my first sale, I have two good relevant stories, I would say, about that. My first one was I wanted to go after big dogs when I first came into the industry. Why aren't we calling like Reebok, Gatorade, and Under Armour for this magazine? They're like, go for it, kid. You know, like, yeah. I was like, okay. And Reebok called me back. And the dude really politely explained to me, because he was like, what are you looking to do here? And I was like, well, I want to get your ad in the magazine. He's like, well, what's your magazine? I told him, well, it's a syndication. It's a free magazine. Pick up. And he was like, okay. And he's like, so you're looking for us to sponsor your magazine? I go, no. Looking for you to buy an ad. And he politely explained to me that Reebok does more for your magazine than your magazine does. He goes, so what you're asking for is a sponsor. So you know. Okay. You know, so how much is it to sponsor a full page ad? And I was like, 1500 or whatever it was. He's like, all right, I'll do 4 months. Tenacity. I was like, cool, rock on.
Sweet.
And then, you know, dabs all around the office for
getting Reebok.
The idiot new kid who's like, oh. And then the secondary, and where I really found my niche, and this is how I ended up going into my own business, was I wanted to land some cool, like, I always thought of like the Mad Men days of advertising as like the premier. That's why I wanted to get into advertising. Not to be a chauvinist or to do nylon ads, but just because of like sitting people down in a room and like solving a problem. How do we deliver this message to the public? And so Bentley of St. Louis is down in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want to go after them because I would love to just test drive a car, sit in. 23 years old or whatever I was like, I just want to sit in a Lambo. And so I went down there and they were like, sure, like, what's your pitch? And I was like, pitch? Oh. So I went back and I put a suit on and I took a photo holding the hockey stick and I did different positions, like one of me standing, squatting. And then I was driving a Chevy Malibu at the time. And so I took the car and I mirrored it twice and had ice on the bottom. And it was three of me in front of a Malibu. It said Bentley St. Louis smooth as ice. And then I went back and I showed them that. I was like, but this is your cars and three blues players. And they're like, love that. I was like how I did that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of started doing that. Like Pickleman's Deli, who has a mascot now, they came up with
Pickle.
Yeah. May or may not have been pitched by me at some point. Okay. And I was told that it was too expensive and it was too whatever. And I went in with the painting. So the painting is still down at the SLU location. I made this painting of Pickleback, this music group. And I had a whole backstory. Gary Pickleman was the lead singer.
Like Nickelback, but the pickle version.
Right.
Okay.
And he just lived in a town. He was a cucumber. And he lived in a town with a bunch of other cucumbers. And then like, he was always getting into things. And they're like, oh, you really got yourself into a pickle now, Gary. And he left town. He was sad and somber. He fell into a vat of brine. He became a pickle and he came back and was like, damn, Gary, like looking good. And he's like, yeah, it's like whatever, you know. So he started a band and it was Francis Dill, Steve Gherkin, Gary Pickleman, and Rob Sauer, I think. And so I took this painting and this backstory and I was working with just two of their locations at the time and I pitched it to their corporate. I hope I don't get you guys canceled on myself. Like, no. Pickleman's gonna come after us. Yeah. A big lawsuit. And I was like, hey, and then the dude that worked at corporate at the time was like, just so you know, we've been kicking around the idea of a mascot for about 2 or 3 years. And I'm like, well, just so you know, this one is ready to rock. Like this could be the next California race.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's, Pickleback.
Yeah.
Pickleback.
Yeah. Like I don't know if he's, what is their song? What was the one that was like, is it a picture?
Yeah. Photograph.
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 Yeah. Yeah. So they were like, nah, not really. And so I did this sample video. And to this day, like if you go into one of the locations, I'll leave that to the listeners and watchers to figure it out. But it's probably, it's 25 or 26,000 views versus like their next highest one being like 800 views. I remember at the time they were like, do you think this is worth X amount of dollars? And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, whatever your reaction or interactions are on it, like I could do social media too, pay me extra for that. They didn't like that. And then when I was out of town, the dude from corporate was, I had an assistant at the time because I just kind of started kicking this off my company. He just talked to her all rude. So I called him and I'm like, hey, we're not going to do business anymore. Like, are you sure you don't want to think that? Because I was getting all 18 patients at the time. And I'm like, yeah, positive. So that was the end of that. But that was the very beginning of Inside the Circle, my first company. So early on, I knew right away that my relationships had to be, it was relationships over money, right? Like, who can I work with long term? How I got into that was we had fire sales radio station where you could buy a 30-second ad for $5 or a 60-second ad for like $10. And I was like, can I buy these? I'm like, I guess. Like, how would you want to? And I knew that if we were doing it, other channels would probably do it. And so I went around to other channels. Time of MS and Clear Channel, no iHeart or Hubbard. And I just bought inventory 2 years. Like year three, I went out, all the people that were like, oh, your station doesn't fit my demo. And I was like, how about this station? So I could sell it at 20, 30% markup and I get a 20% kickback stations as an agency. So I'm making 50% margins on these things, still selling them cheaper than what you'd get anywhere else because it doesn't expire. So that's how I started Inside the Circle. It's through radio. Then got into, because of two great mentors, television, print ads, and Nine Yards. It's awesome.
That's
so cool.
Yeah.
So how long did you do instead?
Up until the pandemic.
Okay.
So on and off. There was times in there where like, I didn't know what SEO marketing was or like search engine optimization. It was like new thing at some point. And so rather than like switching gears, I had to figure out how to do it. It's probably my biggest weakness was also the yes man time. Like, yeah, we can do that. Stretch myself into the SEO stuff. I went and applied and got a job at YP, just Yellow Pages Online. And I went through their training. It was like 5 months. And so rather than going back to school, got paid $9 an hour. All right, you're ready to go on the floor. Actually, I'm ready to go back to my business. So I just went back and used what I learned.
Thanks for paying and teaching me at the same time.
Right. Thanks for paying to teach me. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's another prominent company that I'm still have a great relationship with here in St. Louis that does social media stuff. And it's funny because I told them that story in the interview. Still got offered. And I worked with them for 6 months to learn their business. And I just took that note. So there was dips and doozles, but we'll get it to the mentorship. That was really finding someone to guide saved me a lot of things.
Oh, I've experienced something like if I wouldn't have had the mentor that I had from it today.
And failure is like the best learner, right? So like think we talked about this here today is like it's not about winning and losing, it's winning. If that's your mentality, that failure wasn't really failure, that was a chance to get better. So try to bounce back.
I'm innocent. I didn't fail 10,000 times. I just learned 10,000 ways not to pick a light bulb.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what lead? So started all this and then, when did Punchline kick off?
Really
recently.
So, during the pandemic, I kind of had to switch gears. Most of my clients were restaurants and mortgage broker friend said that that's what they call an avalanche income. So in like 19, I made X, and then in 20, I made part-time McDonald's money, basically. And I didn't get any PPP loans. I didn't get any government assistance, anything. And so it was a rough go for a while. Then I kind of stumbled into somebody I'd worked with prior had asked me to do like national sales for their app and their nonprofit. And so I started doing these projects and going all over, kind of making connect dots to help raise money for veteran organizations. Through that, a very prominent company offered me a job, well-paid job, to be their director of outreach. So I got into that. And I started to feel some fulfillment from that because it was all nonprofit stuff. I was like, man, this is pretty cool. And like, this company's making money off helping other people. So how can I do that? Kept running into Reed Lowe at different events. And him and I became buddies, primarily because I never watched hockey and didn't know who he was. So, like, we just struck up a conversation, like, matter of fact, that's like I was fanboying out. This was like, what's up? He was cool and I was cool. To this day, we're like brothers now. It's a relatively relationship, but like family dinners and stuff.
Yeah, for those people listening that may not know who Reed Lowe is or is St. Louis and hockey fans, Blues fans, Reed Lowe was the enforcer for the Blues in the early 2000s. He's got some pretty gnarly fights on YouTube. I know that he was posting them. He was doing something on Instagram for a while. Was that you that you were doing the?
Him and I. Yeah. It was Friday Night Fights.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it was an idea he got from somebody else, but him and I exited.
Yeah. And he was posting little videos recapping some of his fights or a fight that he liked. It was pretty cool. I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a great dude. Yeah. And it's funny because he's never fought off the ice.
Okay.
And one of my favorite clips of his is like the announcer's talking about it pans over to him in the penalty box and they're like, Reed Lowe has more fighting majors than any other 8 NHL teams combined. Like a singular person had more fights during that part of the season than any other 8 teams combined. So
that's awesome. It's a badass stat.
Yeah, like much different on the ice.
Yeah, he took over for Tony Twist when Tony Twist left.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and all those dudes consequently, you know, I'll fast forward that in a minute, but kind of work with a lot of enforcers. So Reed and I started kind of just collabing on stuff, and he has an events company, RL34 Events, which is an incredible company, and it's completely philanthropic for the most part. Like almost everything he does is for charities. And so he was like, let's just do this. And I was like, ooh, perfect timing. And felt good. And like, we were making our money and still make our money off helping other people. And so that is pretty fulfilling to rest your head on. I love still being involved with that at a capacity. And then at the time, he had another company that I kind of helped do business development. So we were just full-on partners and just hanging out every day, and became buddies. And one thing I forgot to mention is I had a sports radio show on campus. And then I turned it into like a comedy satirical show. But the sports thing was funny because I still to this day didn't know anything about sports. Like I couldn't name 7 professional athletes currently playing collectively all the professional.
Okay.
And that's with like understanding how social media works and stuff. So like I know Patrick's name, Kelsey's name, because Taylor Swift.
Right.
You know, like probably not a very dude thing to say, but I'm not a sports dude. Like unless my sons are playing or I'm coaching my son's sports. And so
how did you get into sports radio if you
they had a gap.
Really? And they just like, said how do you want
to throw them in there.
Sunday morning. Yeah. Like nobody's listening. Still. My friends used to Ron Burgundy. They would text me completely untrue stuff. Yeah. Like, I remember I spent 20 minutes one day, like, praising some dude to be the first African-American in MLB history to win a certain award. And like, one of my buddies was like, it's a white guy. And I'm like, damn it. So, it was not great. So, that's when I changed over to, like, satirical news.
Okay.
That show was called Nobody. So, my first show was called Catch the Buzz. I don't know if it's archived. And the last one was called Nobody. Know About It was more up my alley.
Sure.
And I had a segment on there, actually. I was just talking about this morning, because when we get into this part, it is heavy. So I used to still do stand-up comedy.
Oh, hobby. Awesome. I didn't know that. Okay, cool.
Right. So this is where Punchline comes from.
I kind of think, well, I saw in the questionnaire that stand-up comedy, I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah. You probably wouldn't like my stuff. That's funny. But when I first started out, the scene in St. Louis was hot, and it was like Nikki Glaser was doing open mic nights still. Like her and I were running the same circuit. Tommy Jonigan was still doing open mic nights. Like him and I would be like heavy anchor.
Yeah, like, I've been to the heavy anchor a couple times.
Yeah.
I did an open mic once. It didn't go so well.
The fact that you went up there and did it means it went well. You got to think about it like professional sports. Like how many people that are funny or told they're funny actually had the balls to get up and do it once? So,
very little.
Win one, right?
Sure. Didn't feel like a win, but okay. I'll
take your word. Well, for it should just for bravery,
just getting up there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fun. Like, and there'd be times when like there'd be like 4 or 5 people in the crowd, but I just loved it. It was very therapeutic for me to go tell my story in a comedic way, and had done zero healing my traumas at that point. So that was like my only, just like joking about what a mundane life I had. And so fast forward to Punchline, why it became a thing. I had that stuff going, and then Reed and I started doing this stuff, and I was like, man, I want to get back into radio. He's like, I'll do a show. Sure. So we started doing a show on KFNS called Punchline, because he, as an enforcer, punched people in the face, mm-hmm. and me, as a comedian, told jokes. Perfect. Punchline is where the title comes. It's from him and I's flagship show. And then KFNS went out of business.
I forgot about that.
Recently.
Yeah.
And this was right around the time that I was going through a lot of transition. So 23, almost going to 25. 23 was a wild year. I was in what I believed to be the last relationship I'd ever be in at the time, and was loving it. But what happened inevitably was, a few months into that, I lost my job with that national company. And so there goes my career path, where I thought I would retire. A month and a half later, my mother got ill. And then June of that year, she passed. And a lot of unrequited traumas there that I now would never solve. And then like a couple months later, one of my best friends in the whole world had a complete mental breakdown. And so I deflected all my emotional baggage and inability to deal with my mother's passing and career changing. And what am I going to do with my life? And how will I ever resolve these traumas? And I just pushed it all into helping my buddy, because I was like, well, I don't know how to save myself, but maybe I can save him. And luckily, he's doing fantastic, and it worked. But what suffered from that was not only myself. My life became stagnant. I had a lot of crutches, smoking weed a lot, you know, very stagnant career path. I had no purpose, didn't know what to do. And then I got broken. And as painstaking as it is to this day, it was the best thing to happen, because I look at it like, and I don't know if you guys are religious or not. You know, I pray to God, but I also like work with the universe, right? Like I believe in the universe.
Similar.
So like we all have this energy about us. And so what happened in my brain at the time was a realization of the cyclical patterns that I had throughout relationships because of my fear and my anxious attachment style. It all stemmed from fear of abandonment. And the realization that at a certain point in your life, you can no longer just be self-aware and identify your traumas. You have to overcome them. Otherwise, they're just excuses. It's an armor. So everything I was projecting, everything I was living throughout my entirety of my life, most of my relationships, romantic or otherwise, I had this shell on and I was deflecting. And especially in like personal relationships, romantic ones, I made a conscious effort almost that became subconscious to not learn about that person, to not interact with that person, because I was sure that they were going to leave. And so rather than overcoming that and becoming a better version of myself each day to create a stronger bond between the two of us, I would, when I felt love, I would deflect by self-destruction, because I'm too nice to be mean. But there was never like yelling and screaming. It was just like, how unattractive can I be? Well, a dude who doesn't do anything with his life, gains weight consistently, smokes weed every night, and is just a lame ass with no direction and defensive about everything his partner says and no self-awareness. Right. That's about as many red flags as you can toss into a fire. And so then there was this disillusion that I had that I was faking the first part of these relationships, when in actuality, that was who I am. How do I become that person permanently? Right? How do I get rid of all these red flags and stay in my green flag? Whether it's for, at the time, was for that past relationship. When I got broken up, the reason I mentioned God is because I thought, man, I've had so many opportunities. He's given me so many chances and said, hey, I'm going to change this. I'm going to take this away so you focus on me. And I think this last relationship was the realization that I had was, he was like, hey, do you love this person? And I've never met. Do you love this person enough to marry them? Yes. Answer. Good. I'm going to take it away. Instantaneously. I'm going to jolt the thing you love the most in this world so you can finally realize you can't continue this way. right? Because there's peaks and valleys. Whenever I was in a relationship, valley. And so that realization pushed me into a position where the first month or two, my changes were to try and prove something to her. I am worthy.
To know love.
Yeah. And then at some point, I've now changed the phrase because I look at it as God finally, like a dad. Come on, man. And then eventually he's going to spank your ass.
Right.
Spank my ass. And so I looked at it as like, eventually, I don't like the phrase faking it till you make it, but I now look at that as doing it till you become it.
That's great.
So I created the habits out of need and necessity to be loved and validated, but I've continued the habits to continue to validate and love myself, which is a much easier way to live, because I can live in gratitude and servitude and be thankful for everything. We can talk about morning set, but it started off as for somebody else. Now it's become solely for me. People, not unlike yourselves, that have gravitated into my life because of that, God has given me because of that, because I'm walking my purpose, has been incredible. I've never felt this way in my life. So I don't regret that heartbreak. It still tings at me and lingers. It's not that old. I'm grateful because I wouldn't be where I'm at with every mistake, everything has happened.
That's great.
So you said something about your morning routine. So was a part of kind of what helped you kind of dig yourself out?
Yeah. I mean, the thing I admired most about my ex was her, I saw as stoic. She's a very stoic person, right? She's unbothered by things, but not because of lack of care, but because of her self-awareness. And so the understanding that I dove into stoicism. And so I've accumulated some different habits, but my morning routine basically is a mind shift and a win for the day. So I start off my morning. The very first thing I do is I have a journal I keep by my bed. That's my worry journal. So like today, if I get mad in traffic or if I lose my temper in a meeting and whatever it else is, that counts as a worry to me also. That's something I want to change in my life. So in the mornings when I wake up, I write down what I'm worried about or what I would like to have changed yesterday. So some of the worries might include like, how am I going to get I've got conflicting interests now because I coach my youngest son's basketball. Well, the first two practices of this year are tomorrow night. I already have an event next Monday when I already have an event. And it's like, I agreed to coach his team, but I'm like, oh, the head coach can't show up for the first two practices. That worries me. So I write that down and then I write, what can I do about that today? What can I do about it this week, this month? The same as I blew up yesterday. What can I do differently next time? How can I effectively make that change and create a habit so it's second nature? And that gets that out of my brain onto me. But now it's not pulling at me during the day. And then immediately to shift my mindset is something that I really love that I've done because it seems so simple, but it's been great. I'm not a mental health expert by any means, but it works for me. Is then I pray in gratitude. And I start with small or big things. It's always 8 to 15. But the little tiny things that we don't think about, you know, like forget first world problems. Like I'm grateful I have all four limbs. I'm grateful that when I open my eyes, I can see my room. I'm grateful that I get to get my son ready for school in the morning. The little things. And that puts me in a mindset of like, man, my life is so much better than I might have thought it was. From there, I work out. I find that not only does it scientifically release endorphins and all that sort of stuff, but it's part of my mindset. So what happens is that after I work out or during a workout, I'll listen to an audiobook, try and learn something, or I'll watch a documentary about how to do something. Like one of the most obscure ones was like how to start a t-shirt company. Never will I start a t-shirt company, but now I know how. You know, like so. And then after that learning period, then I will listen to Proverbs or audio Bible to kind of strengthen my spirit a little bit. And then some self-affirmation stuff, which is my last thing. Like Stuart Smalley type shit, right? Like, I am good enough. I am strong enough. I am worthy of love. Because when you speak positively to yourself, it has the same effect as speaking positive to somebody else, negatively to somebody else. You're the most important person in your life for your kids. Face mask mentality. Right. So because of those habits and living that daily routine, if I have a bad moment or a bad day, I don't know the last time I had a bad day. I've had bad moments because no matter what that moment is, I know tomorrow's going to be better because I'm stronger, closer to God, mentally healthier, I'm more self-aware. I'm a better version of myself no matter what happens out there. So I get to start tomorrow with anew.
I think that's great. Yeah, I mean, I know so many people that like one little thing will go wrong in a day and the next thing you know, the entire day is ruined. That's like, just like you said, it's just a moment. All in all, you probably had a really good day, but all in all, you're in that one moment that might have lasted for 5 minutes, screw up the remaining 23 hours, 55 minutes. Like,
yeah.
I think that's part of kind of where that gratitude falls in, at least for sure. I have a bad moment or a bad, you know, phone call, a deal falls apart, I have something happen. It's like, I got to remind myself of all the other great that kind of helps. Person.
Yeah, it's like you're putting yourself in a mental prison. And I didn't even realize, because I used to tell my sons about it all the time. I still do. My youngest one's real big on it. Something bad will happen to him. He'll be grump all the time. Probably seen it. Mm-hmm. And I just sit down and talk to him. So him and I have an agreement too. 6 months or so. No yelling and screaming. And I was never like, John Spain, 4 times his life. We don't do that. We talk about things. It's something I had read about when everything your kid does wrong, quote unquote, has a disciplinary action attached to it, at some point they become liars.
Avoid punishment.
Because they don't want to get punished. And so we look at a lot, obviously, like if you're, you know, doing something ridiculous, you're getting punished. But even then, we talk about the punishment and why, his responsibility in that scenario. What could you have done differently? And if during that conversation, I come to the conclusion that he understands what he could have done differently, takes on responsibility, okay, cool, try that next time, right? And then there's no punishment, per se. Just, you had to talk about it. He learned a lesson. And since we've started doing that, he opens up. Like, I just let him talk sometimes. And other times, there needs to be a punishment. And we're like, all right, so could you have done that differently? Yeah. Who's responsible for that? Because he always tries to scapegoat those kids too. Well, if so-and-so wasn't doing this, I wouldn't have laughed and outburst. Or if so-and-so hadn't called me stupid, I wouldn't have pushed him. Okay, well, we can't control him. We control our actions. So we're going to go without electronics. Deal? Yeah. Okay, but mad at me right now. Did I do this? Is my responsibility? Or was it your actions that did these things take? My responsibility. Okay, cool. As long as we know that. So then usually by like 3 hours, once he processes, he'll chill. Gets that.
Yeah, we were talking about that yesterday when we were sitting up at the club, and I was telling him, I told him about the book that we're reading right now, and that's a lot of the premise around it, which, you know, it's two things can be true at once. So, like, yeah, your child could be bad, but your child's not a bad person. Like, they could have
a bad choice.
He made a bad choice, but he's not a bad person. He'd still be a good person. And, you know, you can still punish him, and, you know, but he can still feel sad about it. And I've learned a lot so far from this book. I said, I'm pretty far behind. I think about 100 pages in. I still got some.
Yeah, we're about the same.
Yeah, so I got, yeah.
Got some catching up to do.
Well, I've got a week in Florida to catch up on that. So,
there you go.
Yeah. So I'll just audiobook it and listen to it on the way down there.
Yeah, I'd be lying to you if I've already planned. I'm like, I'm going to need to audiobook the last half of this because I feel like I'm not going to make it.
Well,
I feel like I learn better at that. Well, at least I can consume it. I almost, you can consume it faster for sure, but like, I don't know, something about hearing it. I'm just such a big like podcast listener, and it's just like how I consume so much listening, because it's like I can do other things while I'm doing it. Like, I'll throw one headphone in, like do the dishes, come down here and do like work or whatever. I go outside and pick up the yard or pick up dog poop or whatever. I can do it with a headphone in and consume while I'm doing something else, which is why I like doing it like that.
Yeah, and I'll listen to it and then like kind of pick out key points and then go back and reread those so I can better understand it. I know Dalton and I are driving down Saturday, so Melissa and him are reading the book as well. So him and I can knock out the book, rub it in Melissa's face while she's down there, figure that out.
Yeah, because we're going to do a podcast with my wife and then his ex-wife. Do like this parenting kind of like after we read this book about it. together. Yeah. So, next we do that once a month. Book review. Or we, when I read a book together.
Is that one that I told you about last night?
Yeah.
Good Inside.
Yeah, I wrote it down. Check it out too. So, I'm going to audiobook it.
Yeah, okay.
I wonder if your comprehension is, because you guys are both high performers career wise too. So, like, I wonder if it's something about the thought of spending this time reading right now that could be doing it.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. That is what it is.
For sure. It's probably hard to comprehend. Like,
I could be
shoot.
There's other, so many other things I could be doing. Yeah, I can be doing other things while I'm driving, while I'm doing whatever around the house, or like just knocking out like mundane like little things. I can do it while I'm listening. Yeah. So that's definitely. Super.
Have you tried setting space out for those things though?
For reading or for those things?
For reading.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I so my,
like blocked off on your calendar, physical calendar, because I don't know if you've seen it or not, but he and most people have made fun of me for it. Not really, but
I haven't. I think it's great.
Lightly, you know. I keep a paper calendar.
Okay,
and I write down everything. And so, like my morning routine or like my evening walks, my time with that, I've got time blocked out for this thing because I make time for myself first. Okay. I find I have more time now. I used to like finish my day. Damn,
gotta
get
do this all these done, things. Or,
now I'm like, by 8 o'clock at night, I'm satisfied that I've done it.
Yeah, I definitely could be better about that. I typically read in the mornings, like first thing when I wake up. I wake up, walk downstairs, sit on the couch, open the book, tell my kids what I do. But like, yeah, 2 days ago, my wife comes down and I fell back asleep on the couch in mid book, you know, like, because it's just, you know, but so yeah, I mean, I need to be better about time blocking and making times like set in stone for sure.
Yeah, it's that thing. Again, I say it's because I taught it. It's like, so valuable. So it may not work for everybody. But like during this growth period, I've been a yes man to different modalities that I would have thought would be. 8 months ago I knew what sound baths were. What? No. But I'll do it now and done it.
What's a sound bath?
Yoga I've done. Breath therapy. Sound bath is basically meditation.
Oh, okay.
Bowls.
Oh, okay. That. Okay.
But like breath therapy, remarkable. I don't know what works for everybody, but like there was something about that. And it's just 20 minutes.
Is this something you do yourself?
No, it was meditated. It was during this contrast therapy. It was the overall arching thing. Plunge 360, cold 360. I'll get you the right information so you can add this.
Yeah.
Aaron does the breath work. The contrast therapy. So it's like you do this breath work for like 20 minutes and then you get into a cold plunge for 3 minutes. You do a sauna for like 5 to 10 minutes. Cold plunge. Sauna.
Is this breath exposure STL? I feel like I've seen them on Instagram.
No, but there's a bunch of these. There's things like this.
Yeah.
But the breath work part was like not life changing for me, but really helped me understand better how to meditate. And it's like meditative music and then you're doing this breath work. Basically, it's guiding you on how to breathe through this thing. All these. Weird. What do you think would be weird?
The Hof.
Wim Hof.
Yeah. But it was cool. And like, I've done yoga, I've done CrossFit, I've done all these different things. It's all the stuff that I think of it now as a, even if it is a placebo, like, I'm still not convinced that it's infrared, but just based on what.
Yeah.
What they use. So I'm like, whatever. But I do it all the time. And in my brain, it's helping me stay young.
Yeah.
Right. And so. 100%. I think that the placebo effect we know scientifically is a thing. So I'll try any modality because some people, your mind heals a lot. Your mind can heal physical pain or like cancers stuff, right? There's studies that show this.
Sure.
So try everything. Modality wise, it's healthy. Don't look at it as hope. I haven't done tarot.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm that naivete to go the Miss Cleo route. But anything physical or mental could be of a healthy capacity, I try to.
Awesome. So you mentioned something about a mentor being kind of really in your life. Can you kind of elaborate on that? That's something Pat and I have had great experiences with.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and part of that too is I had a stepdad growing up as of like 5 or 6 years old, but don't know who my father is. Not the foggiest thing. Not even a first name. And so the two people I looked up to in my life growing up, My grandparents raised me primarily. So he retired when I was like third grade. Primary school. And so I didn't understand what hard work was because this dude's like at home all the time. They just have, they just have money. Grandma didn't work. I'm like, wait, we have food and stuff. We go on family vacations. He's not going. And then like my stepdad worked his butt off, still does, like 6-7 days a week. Didn't have much to show for that either. So like I could sit at home and collect money somehow as a kid. Or I could bust my hump and still be in this kind of same realm. Where's my direction? And so, you know, stumbling through a lot of different things, and then later on in life, my first real like mentor was a dude named Edmund Crystal. He owned the Crystal Ad Agency. So this is when I was first starting out inside the circle. And first person I hired was an assistant. She was like, let me introduce you to this guy. He does what you do. And at the time, he passed in 21, unfortunately. But at the time, he had like GG Hams, Creepcore Camera, West County Autobody, all these things. And he kept his stuff small. And he just kind of went over with me how he does like 4, 8, 12-month contracts rather than 6 and 12, why this transition works. And he still wrote all his invoices on a typewriter.
Oh, wow.
Typewriter. 2012. Typewriter. And then he was like, you know, where do you see yourself? I remember like the first time we met, I asked the dude, he's like, do you have any questions for me? Like, one, can you adopt me? And two, can we meet every week? He was like, definitely meet every week, but done raising. And so we just met like all the time. And I remember at some point he brought in this other dude who he worked with at Brown Shoe Company. He was in marketing at Brown Shoe before he started saying. The other guy was Larry Hughes, who later started Hughes Ad Agency, H-U-G-G-S.
Yeah.
I just don't know if I'm saying like Hughes or huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a Trump accent about it.
Yeah.
Huge, huge, huge agency. Which is now HLK Ad Agency. Mm-hmm. So it's like a public trade. And so these two dudes were gracious enough to meet with all these coffee and Clayton, like at least twice a month. And we would just sit down and shoot breeze, and they would talk to me about marketing and how they got started, what their, where they found success and where they didn't. And so I had two examples, like this big conglomerate, and this dude who rented an office space from Sunset Draperies. Because he also did their advertising and had a very comfortable life because he kept his shop small and he ran his stuff clean and he connected his people to different television, radio, and print ads. Take that 20% markup. And so at some point around 2016, these dudes just unleashed the floodgates. After that, they're a common thing and they called everybody. I started getting emails and calls from like, all the television stations, all the print, all the everything. Hey, Ed, I said, this guy didn't work. So 2018, 920 square foot office in Chesterfield, two part-time salespeople that I hired from a restaurant at the time, assistant, we were top 5 ad agencies in St. Louis, up against like Merit's and stuff.
Oh, wow.
It was like this much space. Right, but we had like 36 clients on the books. We were making headway, and we were doing good work because we were a handshake. I think that's what makes the difference, and that's why we're still. So we're very much about just do what you say, ask people what they need. Like agencies now, like I've sat in on stuff. This project consultant will come in and tell you what you need. You can't sell beard butter, hand wraps, protein drinks the same way.
Right.
Different demographic, different style, but so many agencies will go in and be like, oh yeah, we do this. This is how we do it. This is your format. This is what this money gets you. Whereas these dudes taught me to go in and basically say, okay, it's a $10 rule. So if you have $10 spent on, here's free advice that I got, so I'll give it out. If you have $10 spent on marketing, you use $5 on acquisitions, new clients, $3 on attention, keeping your current clients. $2 is your wild. But this $2 is where I am. That's my brand. And so one of the things that I feel helped me successful in this industry was that I never went in and promised an ROI. Early on, I shouldn't say never. Early on, I did. But then you're setting yourself up for failure. Because if I'm like, yeah, spend $1,000, you'll make $2,000. Don't.
They look at you like a liar.
Right. But if I go in and say, I can assure you that I can help you get your name out there so more people know who you are, this is how much it'll cost you. And this is what you should do with the rest of your life. No brainer. Really, no harm, no foul. I'm still helping you navigate. Yeah. Now, rather than telling you how to do your acquisitions, I go into this discovery phase. First meeting was always discovery. What have you done? What's worked? What wouldn't you never do again? What's working for your competition? Who is your competition? Let's see where they're advertising. What do they do? Almost 100% of the time, it was never ad pages as the answer for restaurants, even though like so many restaurant new owners are like, well, the people from ad pages came in and said that they're the people in the community have been asking when we're going to put coupons out. So do you really think, for one instance, that somebody at home, three of us are sitting around like, man, I really want to try that new restaurant. I'm going to wait for a coupon.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
And I'm like, does that even sound logical to you? And how they sell you? Right. And like, you're going to spend $2,500 a month. And so the biggest clarity there that I was able to like shine on to people was like, what do you do when you get that value back? And like almost every answer was thrown. Including mine.
Yeah.
Why do you think spending $2,500? Cartvertising. Another one. Client. But Schnucks, they bought this. And I don't think it was Schnucks that does it.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah, yeah.
Those ads that used to be on
the plastic things. Mm-hmm. Like little billboards on the inside of the cart.
Yeah. I said, how many times? Tell me one of those you've seen. And he's like, well, they're on every cart. I'm like, yeah. Tell me one of the ads you've seen. I don't know. I don't look at
it. Yeah.
They're right in front of you. So why are you spending money on it, dude?
Like the ones you see at the urinals, like right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know those guys. I know those guys.
But I mean, I'm sure advertising and all that is, I mean, it's had to have changed now with the rise of social media. And I mean, is print and all that still really relevant these days now that you've got social media? What it is?
Depends. I think there's a place for everything. That it's going to phase out, but you still have your, 55 plus, 60 plus now probably this demo that prefers to read, but what's the accessibility and right. Will they read it online? I still consider online articles print ads, just in different.
Gotcha.
But I think that when you're talking about, there's definitely a difference in the way things soon, but it's one of those things about going back to basics, at least I found in my experience, because obviously I market and advertise brands I build punchline. And the basics for me were always tell the story, connect with the people. So I prefer think that lifestyle resonates better than head on applied directly to forehead type ads, right? So like one of the ones that always sticks out in my brain, I love to reference kind of model, old butter. So an old Butterball commercial, like late 80s, early 90s, would be like a family playing football in the yard, and there's leaves all around because it's fall, and they're sitting around the table, and there's laughter, and I want to be a part of that family. And at the very end, it just says Butterball. Shit. That's the key. I need that turkey. Like, if I want that life, I need that turkey.
Yeah.
And so, like, that's kind of how I think about that. That's why I say I always commercialize things. Because somebody will talk, do something. To me, I can run a commercial in my head. Basically. How I would. That would make me feel the way that our conversation. So when I come up with an ad or a brand, like one of the things we're working on now. So besides running shows on Punchline, what I feel sets us apart as a network is that we build the brands beyond the shows. So you have your show, but what's going to bring value to that show? Why do A, people want to watch it, B, companies want to be sponsored and involved in it? And that is if that name gets big. And it's always been in my mindset, it's less expensive to create a brand than it is to buy a brand. So in other words, I can make YouTube famous way cheaper than I can go buy someone who's already famous. Do a show. So if I have to pay a talent fee out to Ozzie Smith, and Mr. Smith, I don't know what your rates are.
Right.
But worked with him a lot of times. Gracious dude. Like, anytime you run into that guy, he'll use your first name once you learn. Just a really classy guy. But he's got a price tag because people want him as a commodity, right? So, like, let's say that he was doing a show and his talent fee was $4,000 an episode, whereas you don't have a talent fee. I don't have a talent fee currently. So $100 in my pocket makes sense to me, right? So now I can go out and build that brand. So what we're doing now is back to Punchline. So we also work with Cam Jansen, has a show called Conversation on there. He does more like micro dirty jobs type stuff. And Jim Campbell does a show called Soup du Jour. The name was Soupy.
So we're taking it. Former.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so I'm kind of like you. I don't know a ton of
stuff. Cam Jansen followed. So it went Tony Twist. Chase
Twist,
Reed, and then Jansen was towards the end of Reed's career, and then Jansen, and then I guess that would have run into Ryan Reed's.
Okay, I don't remember.
Yeah. So
outside of MMA, I'm very special.
Well, and then they're all good buddies with Tony Twist, who's that's like their big uncle.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Him and Chaser were like the big dogs,
the big guys.
I mean, the Cam grew up watching those dudes, and that's why.
Like, I remember Cam Jansen. Like, I don't remember any old guys. I mean, I was born in
So that Chase and Twist would have been you would have been a baby when they were. Yeah,
are you closer to my age?
I'm 36.
Oh, so you're both.
Yeah, I was 88, but I got towards the end of Chase and Twist's career, and then got to see Reed's full career and Cam's full career.
So we work with all those dudes. And so, Two Men in a Garden, gracious enough to help us create a barbecue sauce line. So, Bare Knuckle Barbecue.
Wait.
Right? Is so each of the guys have their flavor.
Oh, that's cool.
And it's based off their names. Kind of work in progress, but these are basically Twisted Sauce.
Okay.
Twist, right? Yep. Sweet and low. Cam's Bam Bam Sauce. Okay. And then Soupy, Ever the Comedian. He wants to do maybe something a little offset, so we might do like a Soupy Sriracha.
Okay. So, right, cool.
But that's how we're branding outside of that. So that's static income for us. Because then all they have to do is go out and do some autograph signings for some bottles 2 or 3 times and gets their name out there. It's cool for the community because they get to meet these people, hang out, and these dudes are all incredibly gracious. They love their bands and town mates. I mean, they all stayed here in St. Louis. So Cam's from here, but they'll tell you firsthand, like, it's the love that they get. Why they think so? It's a chance to get back, and then part of that will go to charity, part of that will go to us. So it's a cool little deal. Riser United, another company I work with, they send us gear and have our own portal. So, riserunited.com, you can go in and you can shop anything in the store under Punchline, and you'll get 15% right now, you get 20% off of everything. And then Punchline makes a very small percentage of the back end of every buy for us. But not only do you get that discount, we make a little too. And those are great partnerships because there's no skin off anybody's back, but we get to push stuff out and grow our brand and help other brands and help other people interact with the community that we love. So it's really a win-win for everybody. So I took my marketing and advertising background, just brought it into media. So
today, you know, coming from TV and radio, which is not as big as it once was, in my opinion, because of shows like podcasts and all these like independent forms of media, and you're like taking, you know, these older concepts of in radio and TV and bringing them like
new age
kind of.
That's why I say stay into the basics.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, awesome.
Like, yeah, maybe you'll never convince me that there's been a better player than George. But whatever it is the game has evolved, but you still got to dribble the ball. You still got to shoot the ball. The basics are all the same. Football is the same.
Still 10 players on the court.
Right. Like, Mahomes may very well pass up Brady as the GOAT.
Sure.
Right?
Keeps up.
If they win this year, it'll be the only team in NFL history to win 3 Super Bowls back. Two teams have won 2. Nobody's ever won. That could be nuts.
Yeah.
Automatic GOAT status right there. So he's evolved as a player. even Brady during his career evolved. He talks about like how he takes care of his body, right? Like they didn't, the longevity wasn't there.
Like he should have done jujitsu.
Yeah.
Would that have helped?
Had the same, I'd still be married to Jill.
Yeah, maybe. I was going to say, she left him for a jujitsu coach.
He's like, you want to fight for it? He's like, I don't.
Yeah.
Actually, I just don't. I want to put my Uggs on and go over here and not eat tomatoes.
Right. And not eat tomatoes.
Those are two things he does.
That. Yeah, he doesn't eat nightshades, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe he should have been tougher. But the basics stay the same. So I just try and apply those same things. Plus, I'm like a grassroots. I've always believed in the power of like getting somebody's face. Roofing companies, right? Nothing beats it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's why we've had people, I've had people reach out from different parts of the country that want to like zoom in, and we're like, no, you want to do the show once you hear a person. That's how we're doing our show. Everything's going to be face to face.
Yeah. Yeah. I've not done it. A lot of people do that.
I've done a virtual, somebody in Kansas City on his, and I was like, yeah, it was fine, but I don't know. I like this better.
Yeah.
Much better.
Yeah.
And so there's a vibe you get when someone's sense body language.
Right.
And, you know, with the Zoom, I feel like there's like a little bit of a delay with audio. I don't know. I like
it. Yeah. And it feels like you're just watching somebody.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to sit down and watch it.
I don't want to sit down. Like we're just hanging out. You know, I want to know what it is to hang out with Corey for an hour. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Sure. So. But yeah, I mean, for us, like with our branding and stuff that we've done with the show, obviously we've got social media stuff that we do and post on. But you know, we've sponsored some jujitsu matches, professional matches. What else have we done? We've got it's sponsoring the hockey league that I play in on Wednesday nights.
Oh, yeah,
on the website for that league.
What's your hockey league?
It's at Brentwood. It's not associated. Like, so Brentwood has the BHL, which is an adult men's league. But this is just some guy that used to play in the BHL went and bought 3 hours worth of ice on Wednesday nights. So he just owned that slot and he created his own league 30 and up. And it's a pretty solid league. There's some good players in there. So
30 and up, though, sounds like a lot of.
Believe it or not, there's not.
Really?
I mean, because we're not. It's no check. I mean, you can
light check.
Yeah, you just can't like finish.
Come
guys.
In there being an asshole,
right?
It's
so
gentlemen's
yeah,
check.
Everybody's out there.
I was like, because on skates, you're probably what 7 foot tall,
pretty close. Yeah,
you're a giant. You might be a circus bear on skates. That's so, terrifying.
Circus bear.
So yeah, so but that's the thing is everybody just wants to come out and play and skate. Nobody. We all got to get up and go to work the next day. Nobody's out there trying to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
And if there is, they get put in their place pretty quickly. Not just by the other team, but by the guys on the team because they know it's going to get retaliated. And so, but yeah, I mean, for the most part, you can kind of run guys off into the boards. You just can't like finish the check. You can't just smoke a guy. Definitely no open ice hits. But yeah, I mean, there's some funky things that can happen. Obviously, like with any sport. Get hurt, but I mean, for the most part, you're not seeing too many injuries.
Yeah, Nick talked about it on the show. I think maybe I don't even know if you brought it up on the show, but then Nick was like, "Oh, did Pat tell you about the other night?" And he got like,
"Oh yeah, sandwiched."
Yeah,
yeah. So I play defense, but I'm more of an offensive-minded defenseman. So I picked the puck up and was trying to Bobby Orr it, take it from end to end, and came in on two defensemen. I went to split them. Well, there was a third guy. Coming in this way, well, these two guys pinched, and I got between them, but they like spun me around, and so I was skating back, ran into the third guy coming in, and I like Henry Rowan Gardnered it from what was that movie, Little Big League, whatever.
Oh, Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year. Yeah,
and where he breaks his elbow.
Yeah. So I don't have the video of it, but everybody's like, dude, you were 5 feet off the ground, and you came smoked hard on my arm, separated my shoulder. I was like.
Yikes. Hence the 30 and up league, you know, with no checking.
Yeah, way to prove me wrong.
Yeah. No checking.
Way to prove me wrong.
In the 5 years.
Sounds like a lot of injuries. No, not at all.
In the five.
Last week, I separated my shoulder.
In the five years that I've been playing since I've started playing again.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the only time.
Well, if it was 40 and up, I quite literally was standing fully erect, straight up, and looked down, and I guess this position isn't a position I typically do, just to make sure I'm buttoning my pants correctly, and to hurt my back. This is like 4 weeks ago, and I'm fairly physically fit. I mean, I'm not like peak physical condition, but whatever. So like to the point where like I heard a loud pop, center of my back. I immediately laid on my bed, fetal position on my back though, and like rotated my hips to make sure I wasn't paralyzed. Because I was like, why would that have hurt so bad and sounded so loud? Like, what just happened?
Yeah, what did I do?
Like, I think it was just my spine was not used to that, so there was like air in there. It was like, it's just terrifying.
Oh, sure.
So I was like, did I just paralyze myself from the waist down by trying to put my pants on?
My hands? Yeah.
It's amazing how the body wears down at once you hit 30.
Definitely. 33 is when they say you stop like developing new molecular structure in your body.
Shit. Okay. Well, 2 more years.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I have to stretch for a while before I do any activities now or before. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember especially baseball, like, hey, you got to get hot. You got to get hot quick. So you like do a couple calisthenics and you're on the mound throwing as hard as you can with, you know, as quick as you can. So, but now there's no way in hell. Like, I'm having to stretch for like an hour before I want to do it.
Yeah, wait until you hit 40. I'm 41 this year. Like, a low toilet makes me feel like I should probably do some stretching before I sit down. Like, I don't know. That thing looks pretty close to the ground. Yeah. I want to check my hammies before I get on there.
Yeah. Make sure those hip flexes are loosened up.
Yeah, I rode a bike recently with my son, and like I've been riding fairly regularly now. And I could feel it. My ball joints and my hips, both of them were hurting because I was rotating different way than I had in years. I was like, man, my hips hurt?
Yeah.
Both hips?
Both? Both of them?
What in the hazy?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm worried about that because my dad's had both of his hips replaced. So I'm like, fuck, is that like a
genetic thing
and that I'm going to be dealing with hip stuff? But then also think about all the fucking shit that I put in my body through baseball. People don't realize it, but it's not like physical. Like, you're not hitting your chest, but like,
you have less cartilage.
The strains you put on your joints are insane. Like, I know that if I try to go and snap off a slider or a curveball right now, my elbow's going to blow up. But I'm happy that I can still pick up my kids. But that was like the biggest thing. I was like, I always want to make sure that I can at least pick my kids up from baseball, just because I know that the wear and tear, the joint stuff and the ligaments and all that, that's where you're seeing guys in baseball get fucked up.
Yeah. Be prepared to pick up when they're older too. My 9-year-old is teetering on 90 pounds. Still expects me to carry him in when he falls asleep. He'll sit on my shoulders.
Like, really?
As of recent, he still sits on my... You've seen how
he's big.
Large he is.
He's on my shoulders.
Yeah. He looks ridiculous on my shoulders, but his brother did the same thing.
Really?
When his older brother was little, I remember that at one point I had called his mom.
Were they similar in like size when your oldest was his age? Your oldest is a pretty good size kid, too.
Yeah, but he's probably done. He's like my size.
Yeah.
Little dude's pocket.
Yeah.
His mother's stock is larger.
Gotcha.
She has 8 older brothers, and they're all larger than me.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Like, the smallest one is your size.
Okay.
And you're probably 3 inches taller than me? I'm 6'2".
Yeah, I'm 6'3".
If I stand fully erect.
Yeah, I think I'm about similar height. A little taller.
You seem taller.
Well, maybe a little bit, but not much.
Usually, broader shoulders.
That could be a little wider.
But, yeah, I think her shortest brother is like 6'4".
Okay.
So he'll be a big and he's stockier. He's dense.
Yeah.
Like a dying star.
Yeah. That's how my youngest is. My youngest is very, very thick. Yeah. He's built like I am. My oldest is built like my ex-wife.
I think about him like a little gold brick.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't look that heavy.
No.
Pick his ass up.
Oh, for sure. They're the same. So my oldest is probably got 4 or 5 inches on my youngest, height wise. Mm-hmm. But my youngest weighs more than my oldest by 2 or 3 pounds. But when you go to pick him up, you swear he's like 20 pounds heavier than Connor. Really? Just because of how dense he is.
Density.
He's just dense.
Body, people just feel different.
Yeah.
Like the way people are built.
Yeah.
It's just wrestling stuff. Just kind of, people just have different feels. Like when
little man stock. Like when I boxed it. That's something I did when I was younger.
Okay.
190.
Okay.
Right. I'm probably 197. 96. Put on some holiday party weight, so I've been cleansing lately. Hence, this is my breakfast this morning. Shout out to
Fair Life. These. Oh, dude, I got a bunch of them in the fridge.
Yeah, well, they're expensive. It'd be great if they would sponsor one of our shows.
Yeah.
Hey, that's how we got in room.
That's how we got in the room. So, the density thing is real.
Absolutely.
But that was what I was going to say. My older one. used to call this mom. It's like, hey, if you take him to the pediatrician before I do, have him check out his knees. She's like, why? He was probably like six. I was like, because every time we're out somewhere, he's like, pick me up. Knees. It's like where he walks with me. He's playing you for a fool. And you're buying it. I guess whatever. So like at nine, still Tyson's like, sometimes he'll be like, Dad, can I get on your shoulders? I'm tired. Or he'll be like, he's like, it's really hot out here. Can I get on your shoulders? Like, the zoo or something. I'm like, what do you think adding 90 pounds to my neck's going to do? Like, if you're hot, I'm hot. Right. Like, sure. Look how small you are. Like, you think I'm not sweating my balls off? Yeah, jump on my neck, 90-pound kid. Yeah. So I let him.
Right, of course. Of course.
Put on a 90-pound necklace.
As dads, yeah. That's what we do.
Yeah. So I got like a rucksack where all the weight's just around the bottom of my neck.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard of prawning? It's hilarious. So it's like, it's really relevant once you know. Because you know how like when you get a prawn, it's like this, right?
Yeah.
So it's like office prawning. But like we spend so much of our time like on the computer like doing this.
Or,
like, reading phone. And so they call it prawning. You know? And, I often, like, when I'm driving, I'm like this too. And so like whenever I catch myself.
Shoulders back.
Back.
And so,
age four.
Yeah, I'm going to lose us a potential sponsor by this one because I was talking to Scott at the club and I was like, hey, I want to get one of those things that pulls your shoulder. He goes, okay, but think about this. He's like, that's doing work. Think permanently that way or is this going to work while it's on? Yeah, strengthen the muscles. Now I'm just trying to strengthen these muscles. I don't permanent problem.
Okay. Yeah.
Dinosaur. Like a stegosaurus looking for food. T-Rex, prehistoric jungles.
Yeah. So speaking of the club, how did you get set up and hooked up with the club?
I was working with a couple different organizations that were in the club. So originally I did some work with the Hero Network. Still help them out whenever I can. Like that organization a lot. And then Reed and I had the events thing. So Metzner, who's the head of the Hero Network, and Reed were both essentially members, like Jump. So I was at the soft open.
Gotcha.
And I was there all the time. Scott's like, hey, you're here an awful lot. When are you going to join?
Right.
And I gave the cardinal rule wrong answer, which was when I get a few more clients. And he's like, no. And he kind of explained to me. He's like, oh, that makes more sense. Like, what can I do to help out? And so originally I came in there just to help out with their events.
Gotcha. And then you just put a podcast studio in. Or was that their idea to begin with? You just kind of ran with it.
No, that was so much more recent. So I was doing my own thing, and then like when our secondary company, Reed and I had, that's how Punchline came to be. So Reed and I had a discussion back in like May or June, and we knew coming down the pipeline we were about to lose one of our companies, and which meant I'm losing X amount of income, he's losing X amount. And so I kind of, this was during that whole transition, the breakup thing, so a lot of transition, and I was like, damn, so. What do I do? So at the time I kept talking to him about like, do I want to do production? Like, out of all of our events, the most expensive thing paying out of pocket for is production. And I was like, I know that world, do it. Not great. I'm learning every day. Make a lot of mistakes still. But I was like, I can do that. And Reed's like, no, man, low hanging fruit. Like, let's just book more events. And I'm like, I'm a single parent. You know, I got things to do. And plus I love that world. And so how I came to be with Punchline was during this transition, something kept drawing me to take a walk. And I was still debating doing Punchline, and I had a backup plan. So in like June, I had made a deal with another club member to go in and do account management and a good base salary, make a good living, one that I wouldn't have to worry about. Right? Like not wealthy, but certainly very comfortable, with potential to grow. Great, great opportunity. And, but I kept getting urged to go for this walk, and I went on this walk, and I was praying while I was walking, like with my hands out. I was like, God, like, I never really ask you for a sign, even during the breakup, which is when I really want to beg him for things, right? Why? I was like, if I'm supposed to do this production company, like, please give me a sign. And like instantaneously, how are we doing battery?
Oh, okay. Okay.
We're going to work on this battery
thing. Yes, we'll just figure that out.
I got a little insider. My brilliant partner, Sam. And I thought somebody threw something in my head. And I looked up. Red Wing Blackbird had flown out and pecked me dead in center.
Oh, what?
Like almost instantaneously after I'm asking for a sign. No joke. Mm-hmm. Scientifically, I'm too close to a nest probably.
Right. Sure.
Not the first time this bird died. Coincidentally, it was a sign.
Right.
Me. And so I immediately like called Reed or text him or whatever. I'm like, dude, birds pecked me in the head when I'm asking for this. And like, you know my connection. I love nature. And so that was the thing. And then like a little while longer, we're talking about mentors. So later in my life, I have a mentor that I still have. And we have lunch at least once a month. Fantastic. Amazing guy, Pat Mason. He's very paternal advice, just a good friend and whatever. It's a good dude. And so I'm telling him this story. We're at lunch and like, he's like, yeah, you maybe should do that. Because, you know, for 30 years, I've had this in my pocket and I carry it around everywhere I go. And it gives me a lot of peace to put this in my pocket when I put my wallet else in. And I want you to have this. He puts his hand on the table, lifts it up. It's this little wooden cross. And so I still keep every day. I put this in my pocket. This is always with me. And it's worn down probably from him rubbing it, but I rub it sometimes too. Like,
yeah.
I'm thinking about something, whatever. So I carry this around. And all these things were kind of adding up over 2 weeks where I'm like, dude, this is the final piece. What's going to push me over the edge to start the production? And initially, I was like, I want to do a show because I'm so heartbroken right now. Like, it's hard for me to get up at time. And this is where I start my daily routine. All this starts coming into place in one kind of foul swoop because this is like June of this year, right? And so the realization of how to do things daily routine-wise came from one of my neighbors' son and her son had gotten into something. She like followed him into the house. And I was so embarrassed when she walked into the house, which I was also upset about because it was cluttered, right? Like, it wasn't filthy. Like, I don't have like dirty dishes and stuff. There's Nerf darts and like Legos on the coffee table. Looks like two
like my house upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah, but except a 9-year-old and a 40-year-old looks like two 12-year-olds up there. And so they're like, I was like, man, so I got embarrassed. So I started cleaning my house a little bit. The next day I was like, I'm gonna clean my house at the same time. Like day 7, my house is pretty clean to the point where I'm wiping down baseboards. But it clearly never been wiped down, at least since I lived. And then I'm like, oh, I have a little more time. So I started adding things to my routine. That's where that came. The idea behind that is that once my house was clean, that's why I started adding stuff to my other routine. It's because I had a feeling of comfort when I came home. I was comfortable in my own space. And I was no longer embarrassed to invite people into my space. And it was peaceful. It was calm. And so I thought, man, if I could clean out a little bit of my brain, a little bit of my heart, a little bit of my emotional awareness, then my mind, my body, my spirit, my emotions are going to provide a clean, safe space for me that I'll be comfortable in and a place for me to invite others into where I can give my son a safe space. It's total body and spirit. Where I can give a partner a safe space to provide for them a safety and a sturdy consistency, right? Yeah. I can provide you a safe place. So that's where that came from. So the final push on doing the production company was I called two of my buddies that were going through some stuff. JT, good dude, real good dude, JT Thomas. He had a kidney transplant 7 or 8 years ago now. So I'm like, man, you're on your deathbed. What kept you going? Talk to me about it. Talked to him on the first episode of Mental. My other buddy was going through a divorce. I was getting off of it. And the hardest thing that's ever happened to you is the hardest thing that's ever happened to you. So everything's relative. You're allowed to feel that. You should feel that. So for me, that was the hardest thing I experienced relationship-wise. But my good friend is going through a divorce with 3 small kids, a woman he's been married to for 10 years. And he's still getting up and doing a job. Right? And I'm like, damn, if he can do it, I should be able to do it, right? So I had those two dudes simultaneously on my show, the very first episode. And it was really just to like talk to like, how do you keep going, man? How do you keep going? And figuring this stuff out. And through that episode alone, I was like, yeah, this is it. And I was like, what's really holding me back? The two primary things were holding back, which is kind of counterintuitive. One was letting go of the need for affirmation from other people. That was something I needed a lot of because of my issues. I hadn't healed yet. But as I started to heal through therapy and self-work, I let that go. And so it might sound like an oxymoron to say, once I didn't care about anybody's opinion anymore, I jumped into the spotlight. But in actuality, the reason I'm comfortable being doing the shows and stuff I am now is because I don't care. And I don't care because I'm indifferent about people's feelings. I'm just, I have an understanding that
it's not going to affect your feelings and your right. emotions. Yeah.
Like Jay-Z said, what you eat don't make you shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So like, when I think back on it, my success and failures in life have all been directly affected by me. Not someone telling me I can't do it or I can do it. So that was the big thing. And then the second thing was, don't have a backup. The backup plan is a safe place for me to fail. So I called the dude that offered me the position. I knew mine was going away. I was going to start there in September. And I was like, hey, I can't take that opportunity. Like, why? What are you going to do instead? I'm like, I'm going to build this company. It's like, what? You have a kid. I'm like, yeah, which means I have to succeed. And so after that show, I did a secondary show next week. And that guest on my show was Kiri Anderson. And she's like going through a lot of stuff. Right. She had lost her husband about a year ago now of pancreatic cancer. She had a story to tell. And I was like, you should do your own show, Women Empowerment. Give some hope to other people. She's like, how would I do that? What would it look like? Talked about it. And she started doing it. This is June now. So I have two shows and nowhere to go. And I can't fail. Reed and I are doing Punchline, take it to a podcast. And Pam's like, what are you guys doing? Lozy doing this stuff? Like, I want to do something.
So okay, was he doing a podcast yet or no?
Yeah, he's been doing it for years.
He's been doing it for a while.
He has Cam and Trick. Fantastic show. Yeah. Like, if you're a hockey fan, you're not watching that show, you're missing out.
Yeah, dude's great.
Amazing. Strickland's actually another, Andy Strickland's a Parkway North dude. Real good dude.
Yeah.
Same high school. And he, back when I was at KFNS, he was at KFNS.
Okay.
He was doing his sports stuff back then. He knows about sports, not unlike me. Like, he actually knows them. So they have an awesome show. And then just start kind of like on his show when he had that radio show, the radio station then all of a sudden closes down. KFNS does. And so I'm like, well, shoot, let's get their talent. And so my producer at the time, Joe, was already producing Charlie Tuna's show. So we swooped Charlie Tuna over. There's a big name. And then on Cam's morning drive show, Jim Hayes was on there. So Hayes is like, well, I want to do something. Come on, let's go. So now Hayes has got a show. So really it's about surrounding what I said. When you're walking your purpose, you're surrounded by people that want to see you succeed and want to be successful and want to jump on board with you because you're walking a true purpose. It's being consistent. It's comforting. And I'd like to think that I've tried to make, and believe me, it's a daily struggle. It's never, if you're resting on your laurels, it's not. But I'm going with the flow, right? So the analogy I like to think of my brain is that I've got to do the work. I've got to row my canoe. And I can hang out on the left bank, the right bank. I can stay in the middle. Sometimes I got to stop off and camp. But I'm never going against the current. I'm never worried about where the river is. Because in life, the end of the river, like my buddy Enzo put it this morning, is a waterfall, death. You're never going to get to the end of it. You got to put in the work every day. Can't fight the current. You just got to let it flow. The right stuff comes. So I learned when to let go, when to push hard, what to accept. That overall mindset, habits, daily living, has helped take Punchline to where we're going into 2025 with 20 shows.
Dude, incredible.
Those 6 months. July 23rd is when I created the LLC of Punchline.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's, and I know we talked about it briefly before, and some things you want to talk about don't talk, but where do you see Punchline going? What are your hopes for?
Punchline will be, and I speak this in a manifestation way, will be the premier media network for this region to begin with, and then maybe beyond. Nobody's really doing a one-stop shop. And how we're putting that together is not really trade secret, but like whatever. But like right now already, you can go get health and wellness, you can get sports, you can get comedy, you get all these things. And so this morning I had an amazing meeting with a dude who I think very, very highly of. He has a great energy about him, which is another word I wouldn't have used 2 years ago. I'm like, what a stupid thing to say about someone. He has a great energy about him. He's a good dude. Enzo is going to co-host with me and eventually take over this thing where Sit Down with Stand-Ups used to be a segment on my radio show. And he's the primary host at Funny Bone Westport. So we're going to start filming open mic nights and comedy And we're going to sit down with those stand-ups, two or three of them a night, and interview them afterwards. Cool. Why'd you get into it? Who are you? Because everybody wants to know why you're funny, but no one wants to know, how are you? Who are you?
Right. We should.
Yeah, we had a buddy of mine on from Chris Oliver. You know Chris?
Yeah. I don't know him, but I know the name.
I went to high school with him. We had him on a couple weeks ago.
He put on a five or six people show at Funny Bone.
Yeah, we went to it before. Come on, it's awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Because we're gonna try some stuff out. So it's not just me open mic, which is the amateur. But it's not even amateur.
Aren't you hosting a comedy show up at the club?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, January 25th. It's a charity thing. So whenever I do it now is typically charity. Mm-hmm. I did one last September. I did for the Witch's Walk in Pacific. And January 25th is for Dog Nation. So the proceeds go to helping hockey families that are in need, whatever the thing is. I think I won't speak too much on it because we don't know all the details about where this money is going, but there was recent loss in the hockey community here locally that is probably at some capacity that's where that's going.
Yeah.
Right. Without saying too much stuff. But January 25th, Ventura.
Awesome.
So I'll be emceeing, doing some stand up there. You guys can come laugh at the people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So how long have you been doing stand up? When did you start?
Really, honestly, being a talk show host and a stand up comic, something that I've done and want to do something little. My sixth grade teacher used to give me, like if I was good all week, she would let me do a 4-minute set, which strangely enough is how long you get as an open mic.
Yeah.
It's 4 minutes. So if I was
how long 4 minutes is until you're standing up there.
It's a long time. Yeah. Until you get used to it. And then it's like too quick.
Yeah.
Because then you'll be like mid-joke.
That light, they're giving you the light.
Yeah. And I'm like, I guess we'll never know why I crossed the road. See you tonight. So she used to give me a 4-minute set at the end of the week. But on Fridays, I would stand up for my class, sixth grade.
That's awesome. So
cool. At Jury Elementary out of the county. It was stupid stuff. Like, it was very like, Jim Carrey was like my idol back then. I used to have a pet detective ID card. And I was big on impressions.
Yeah.
I used to try and do impressions all the time. So it'd be me doing like Adam Sandler's version of whatever, or like Christopher Walken singing a song or something, right? And just be like, I don't know, like, or very like observational humor. Like, man, have you ever got done brushing your teeth in the morning and then like taking a big swig of milk only to find out it's orange juice? That's the worst, right? like always 6 years just because I was up there and be like, yeah, oh my gosh, yeah, that's just, it's terrible.
It's killing.
like that's so relatable, dude.
Been there.
Yeah. And then I got heavier into it when I was in my like late teens, like 18, 19, doing some stuff. Early 20s. I started banging it out 2 and 3 nights a week for a while.
Okay.
And I remember Jeremy Essig, actually, first dude to give me a piece of advice my very first night. And that's on YouTube somewhere. It was at Bombshell. Like my first like big thing that I created was this open mic night at Bombshell Bar and Grill. It's no longer there on Main Street. And I get off my set and Jeremy's sitting at the bar. I'm like, hey, do you have any advice for me as a comic? And he's like, you're great at captivating the audience. People want to listen to you. Now you just got to come up with jokes. I'm
like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Pretty important.
Good idea.
Yeah.
It's basically how they're telling a story with like two things that people laughed at. Kind of to it, and I always wanted to be the talk show host. Part came from why I love what I do now is my grandfather used to let me stay up late sometimes and watch Johnny Carson, and he's somebody I've always looked up to. He could listen to anyone, talk to anyone the same way, whether you're the president of the United States or a server at a restaurant. He had the same respect, and he would draw things out of people. And when he would watch Johnny Carson, he would laugh. He was a very stoic dude, so to see him laugh was like, I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy that makes me. And it was just Johnny talking about it. That was weird, wild stuff. Did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm just having talk shows.
Yeah.
So that's where those two things came from. That's where that passion came from. That's why I think that I had such a desire that I didn't know start Punchline. And that's why I'm sure it'll be successful, because I've truly walked on purpose at this point.
It's awesome. Well, I mean, before we let you go, anything else you want to talk about or plug before we get out of here?
If you haven't seen Santa Claus yet, speaking of the club, tomorrow night at the club, we are doing a charitable
bonders.
Yep. Specifically Officer Brown. Yeah. We're going to raise some money and toys for his children. And then another officer that went down. So Santa Claus will be at the club. There'll be snacks and cookies and crafts and drinks. And it's $20 a ticket. It starts at 6 p.m. at 1505 Finn Park Drive. Santa Claus will be there. The real Santa Claus. And it'll be good. Well, you know what? By the time this is out,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. This is probably coming out next week.
This will be out. Yeah, this will be out next day.
So sorry you missed that.
Sorry you missed Santa Claus.
Yeah, missed Santa Claus.
Hopefully it came somewhere else.
January 25th, by the next big thing. Okay. Dog Nation. Sweet. And I'll send you guys a flyer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's 6 to 10. And the comics that night are Enzo, Scott James, who's hilarious, Jack Wright, right, I think, and myself.
Sweet. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
Love to go.
Yeah. Oh, I'll be there. I'm up there all the time. But we always end it with one last thing. Call it the tombstone game. Okay. Here lies Corey. What's it say on your tombstone?
My comedic brain went immediately to the ingredients. But if I'm being honest, because it used to be television. Your time.
Okay.
What do you want on your tombstone? Like pepperoni and sausage.
I remember those. I remember those.
I would say that someone who understood the importance of knowing he doesn't know everything.
That's awesome.
Well, hey, Corey, thank you so much for coming on. It's an absolute pleasure. Love getting to know you. And
thank you guys.
Definitely talk to you here soon. But,
sure.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. If you haven't already, please click that subscribe button for us. You know, we're a newer podcast. We're still trying to grow. So another great thing, if you really want to help us out, share the show with a friend, someone who you think would enjoy it as well. That's the nicest thing you can do for us. So comment below what you guys thought, hit that like button, and we'll see you next time.